Business and Economic Development, and welcome to Tuesday where it's not raining at the moment, which is amazing. We're getting all our water late in session. I'm first of all going to open up work session for possible reconsideration of Senate Bill 572. And colleagues, we passed this bill out on a deadline day a couple weeks ago, and the next day I felt badly about that because it was the last bill we heard, and I felt there were some comments that we needed to spend more time with. And so that was that issue as to whether the home health people should or should not be in this bill, and I'd like to actually have an opportunity for both sides of this issue to have a chance to make that case. So we can resolve that issue. We have received one fiscal back on this bill as of yesterday afternoon, but it's had some erroneous assumptions in it, and then another fiscal we haven't received yet. So because of that, I want to make sure we get those before we actually move the bill back out of committee. But I do want to get this particular issue resolved. So with that, I would need to entertain a motion to reconsider. We did not actually drop this bill to the floor. But I still need a motion to reconsider the vote by which we passed out Senate Bill 572.
So moved.
Senator Starr has moved that we reconsider the vote by which we passed out Senate Bill 572. Any objections? So ordered. All right, so the bill is back before us now, and we're in work session on Senate Bill 572, and I'm going to ask that Sarah Reeder come forward. And Teresa, would you explain the Dash 11 and Dash 12 amendments that we have before us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. You have two sets, Dash 11 and Dash 12. The Dash 11s exempt home health agencies from the measure. That's the only difference between the two sets. There's some clarifications. You will see on the staff measure summary in front of you what changes have been made from the Dash 7, which is what we initially passed out, to the Dash 11s and Dash 12s. They include some clarifications on a couple of different items, such as in Section 7.3, spelling out a more definite definition on what a nursing staff member can reasonably use in physical force for self-defense. It also exempts, in Sections 11 or 12 and 13 of the measure, exempts a state psychiatric hospitals from the measure until July 1st, 2007.
Okay, and the Dash 11s then exempt the home health requirement.
Yes.
The Dash 12s keep it in.
Yes, that's the only difference between the two versions.
With that, welcome back from Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Reeder. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Association for Home Care. Thank you very much for allowing me some additional opportunity to present to you some data based on a couple of different surveys that we did. One specifically was introspective through our membership. We surveyed all of our members requesting data for the last, within the last three-year period, any information regarding reported assaults by nursing staff, home health aides, physical therapists, medical social workers, et cetera, and that is the information to which I've passed out to you. And what you will see there is essentially the reports back from all of our agencies indicating that none of them have had any reported incidences of an assault on any of those folks that would meet this definition of a nursing staff member or the aforementioned types of provider, caregivers, rather. In addition, what I had specifically requested from the Department of Consumer and Business Services was a report that specifically looked at those care provider types in terms of any assaults reported by home health care workers. And that is a two-sided document that was passed out to the committee that also shows that there were actually only two incidences that were reported under the home health care services industry. But what those two are, first off, the first one indicates that it's a home care worker, which is a client-employed provider, which is a state home care non-skilled worker, which does not meet the definition of a home health agency, nor is this is a type of person that is employed by a home health agency. And the second line item there under home health is also a non-skilled in-home care agency, which again does not meet the definition of a home health agency by the bill. So the only two incidences that were evident or reported to the state were non-incidences of home health agencies. So in our mind, this further underscores the impact as far as the safety protocol procedures and policies that are in place at home health agencies, of which I did produce some samples for the committee chair. I didn't make additional copies of those because they are quite extensive, but I did provide that information as well. They underscore that the fact that there are no incidences of assault on caregivers that that are evident whatsoever. And I think that that was an original premise of the Nurses Association, was to get at data as to whether or not there were alleged incidences at all. And what we have found is that there were zero, either reported through directly to our agencies or to the state of Oregon. So, you know, with that, I would just simply say that after briefly reviewing the Dash 11 amendments, that we requested to have home health agencies removed from the bill, which by definition remove a home health agency from the definition of a nursing staff employer. I do believe that this then meets the needs of the Oregon Association for Home Care and our home health agency employers.
Okay. Well, thank you, Sreer. Let me challenge you on one of these issues and in your response. The fact that we have none of these instances have been reported might be challenged, and probably would be when we have Mr. Taylor come forward, is that there, since there is no requirement that they report, it would stand to reason that that there could be incidences that don't show up in the database because there is no requirement that they be reported. I'm just curious as to your response to that.
Mr. Chair, I would simply say that every single director and administrator that I spoke to when we were going through and asking for the data regarding assaults was evident that the atmosphere of orientation and of training and of information passed along to the caregivers directly providing direct care services to patients of home health is that simply that if there is any incidence of where they feel threatened or they feel uncomfortable in delivering care, those things are shared with their employer, and there has never been an atmosphere of retaliation or of forcing a caregiver to deliver care in a home where there is any circumstance whereby there is a dangerous situation. I mean, those things are part of the very first marching orders, if you will, that caregivers are given as far as the direction, because they are outside of the agency. The care is delivered in the home. So I would just simply say that I don't believe there is an argument to say that the caregivers are afraid to make to make known that there is a potential problem for delivering care. These folks love what they do. They love their jobs. They love being able to deliver care to a patient in their home. And I think that if there were any incidences that they felt uncomfortable or that their job was such that was so dangerous that they just felt that they just couldn't even come to work, you know, because they felt that their employer would take some sort of a retaliatory action, I think just is not the case.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for Ms. Reeder? Okay, why don't you stay there?
Yeah.
Martin Taylor, I saw him, there he is. Why don't you come forward, please? This is the Business Committee's version of Point Counterpoint. Welcome.
Senator Metzger, Chairman Metzger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Martin Taylor. I'm here representing the Oregon Nurses Association. An interesting game of crossfire. I hope I come across okay. I certainly will try to be careful.
I will just note for the record, by the way, Mr. DeLashmet has been working this bill and it's out today. So,
that's right.
Mr. Taylor is pinch hitting today, so we'll give him a little bit more leeway here.
I appreciate that. I may need that. So what I want to do on the issue of home health is walk through what this bill actually does so we have appropriate context, and then present two perspectives. One is if there is an issue of violence against nurses, and the other is if Ms. Reeder is correct and this really isn't a problem. This bill really does three things with home health. The first is it says if you're a nurse who has evidence that a patient's history or condition may lead you to believe that there's a risk of violence, you have the right to say, I won't go to that patient by myself. That's a pretty reasonable thing. I think in all of our individual experiences, we would want to be able to have that same protection in our workplace if we had to go to somebody who we knew was potentially dangerous, the right to bring a second person along. The second thing it says is you, as a person who does home visits, have a right to have a communication device to be able to indicate if you are in distress, that you need help. That's also a reasonable thing for people to be able to do. I haven't heard any testimony to express that either of those two things would not happen with the home health agencies. our experience is primarily with county health and with home health agencies associated with hospitals. And we have a mixed experience in those settings of whether or not a nurse can assert they need a second person to come along or whether or not they're always equipped with the communication device. So it's on that basis that we've included those things in this bill. The third thing that it does is it would require home health agencies, like everybody else involved in this bill, to file a report that would indicate the number of incidents they've had and how they responded to those incidents. And this is where we get a little bit to, there's two scenarios. One scenario is you're having some occurrences of assault that are not getting reported broadly or publicly, which is what we're looking for. We're concerned about that. In which case, that report would be important information that we don't have and would make this conversation a lot more relevant today if we had that information. Or B, there isn't a whole lot going on, in which case there would be no reports filed at all, and thus no cost impact or adverse effect on the agency. So this bill really gives you the ability to figure out whether you're dealing with A or B. I would say, lastly, that this basket of things called home health services, I'm understanding, is a bigger basket than I knew when we started this bill. You have two kinds of agencies covered by the Home Health Agency Association that aren't in this bill at all, hospice and in-home care. And you have two where the Oregon Nurses Association has some firsthand experience. A couple home health agencies contract with county health, and those primarily do public health services with low-income and at-risk populations. We do think that that's an area where we see a lot more risk to nurses going to the doors. The second are home health agencies associated with hospitals. And in this case, we believe that there is an issue there, and it's really the same issue that you're facing in a hospital. Those are agencies that primarily do follow-up care for patients that have been released from hospitals. So if you take them out, literally what you're saying is, we may know, because there was an assault at a hospital, that this patient assaulted a nurse. But now that they're in the home health care piece of that hospital system, we're not going to require these basic protections for the nurse. We're going to almost pretend like that assault didn't happen for the purpose of our follow-up care. That doesn't make a lot of sense to us. Then there's also the third group in this basket that, frankly, we didn't anticipate in this bill, and I'm less concerned with. There is a principle of trying to protect all nurses equally, but the third are home health agencies that are mostly not-for-profit or for-profit, but not associated with a hospital, that do primarily care to Medicare populations, seniors and disabled people at home. Frankly, I've made the overture of maybe we could address whether those folks need to be in this bill or not, and the response I've gotten is that we really don't want, the agency doesn't really want to pick apart folks that are in and folks that are out, and so we haven't had that discussion in the form of amendments. I think that's where we're at with these.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Kay. Question?
Okay. I feel lucky that I've been a home health nurse and I've been a public health nurse. And also I've been in situations in which I actually called the police to be with me. And there's no question that as a nurse, if I was in a home where I was assaulted, that I would call 911 immediately because that's my prerogative. I want to know... this bill came forward because there are nurses who have been assaulted and the hospitals, and I'll say hospitals because I've never had this knowledge in home health or in public health, are hush-hushing it. I want to get this out on the table. Is that... mainly why this bill is being brought forward, because there's a whistleblower issue here and that some nurses may feel there will be retaliation or their jobs in jeopardy if they made public that they were assaulted and the hospitals aren't reporting this. I just need to have... I've never worked in the hospital. I mean, I did for a year, but that was right after nursing school.
I think that it's a little bit more subtle than either a hush-hush attitude or a fear of job loss, but it is very real. The fact that it's subtle doesn't make it not a very real issue. Our experience in hospitals is through doing surveys over the last 2 years of 8 of our facilities, and that's internal data, and we haven't presented to the committee because we realize that it's internal data and it doesn't hold a lot of weight, but it motivates us, and it tells us that when you ask nurses the question, have you been the victim of an assault in the last 2 years, that around 18% of our members are answering that question yes, and that's a number that is growing over the last few years, we think largely in response to some changes in the state, increased methamphetamine use, increased treatment to mentally ill people in hospitals as opposed to other settings. But nevertheless, it's going up. And that creates a need for us to respond to that problem. The fact is that 18% of people who were in this workplace could not report being assaulted in the last 2 years. 18% of people who work at Denny's wouldn't report being assaulted in the last 2 years. It is an alarmingly high number of people self-reporting that they're being injured. The response in a hospital would be different than a response either here or at Denny's. In a hospital, typically, the first responder to the incident is the hospital itself. And there is an expectation in many hospitals' policies, their employee policies, that you go to the hospital first. And in that role, we believe the hospital is setting themselves up to do two things that in any other setting would be done by law enforcement and the courts. The first is to contain the situation, and then the second is to evaluate whether or not that's a situation that should be reported to the police. So they're essentially taking on the role of law enforcement in providing safety, and they're taking on the role of the courts in really determining culpability for the behavior. The result with our nurses is they often feel like they're not as protected as they should be and that there aren't consequences to the patients, thus it's a permissive atmosphere for violence. Now, I think many hospitals have stronger policies than that, and I think a lot of times that happens when organized workers sort of assert, hey, you really have to address this now. So this isn't a level playing field. You have some facilities that are much better than others, and our internal data shows us that too. This is essentially a bill that says, look, it doesn't really matter where you work as a nurse. It shouldn't matter if you represent it or not. All nurses ought to have some expectation that if somebody hurts them on the job, and your first response should be to call the police, not necessarily to call your hospital, and that there should be a consequence to that person. You've become a crime victim, and it's not okay to say to that crime victim, by the way, tomorrow you may have to go back into that patient's room by yourself, which is literally the circumstance that nurses are finding themselves in. I don't think it's a hush-hush attitude. I think it's a, we can handle this from within, and there is a sensitivity about police reports in hospitals because we all want hospitals to be safe places to be, and hospitals want the perception to be their safe places. But that, to me, is a secondary value to the value of making sure that nurses both are safe and get justice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Usually if a person assaults in the hospital or in a healthcare setting, they're either in a psychotic break or they're, you know, basically having a psychotic break, or they're under the influence of some kind of drug, whether it's alcohol, methamphetamine, etc. Or like my mother, who had a stroke, was very afraid, and she lashed out at it was probably the aide and not the nurse, and I know this bill only focuses on nurses, and hit her pretty hard. Those are the types of issues or people that I see assaulting a nurse. And in my eyes, it's a hazardous, it can be a hazardous profession in that sense, but I would hate to have a family member come in whose child or son or daughter was having a psychotic break and also having the police coming in because now he's going to possibly be arrested because he assaulted because he was not mentally competent. I find it's, it's just different in a healthcare setting. And I want to address the issue that for the safety of nurses, but I'm not sure. I'm trying to think of another way we can approach, I think, the problem that we want to get at.
With your permission, yes. Chairman Metzger, Senator Miles Anderson, that's a concern we've attempted to try to get at in the bill. We included some language in Section 2, Sub 10.
Bottom of page 3.
Which says...
Which amendment?
Bottom of page 3, beginning on line 30.
But which amendment?
Either one.
Bottom of page 3?
Yeah, sub 10 there. It says it starts with any nursing staff member.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a long and difficult to read the whole sentence. The key passage in that sentence is, the mental condition of the patient at the time of the assault limited the ability of the patient to understand the patient's actions, shall report the assault or cause the report to be made to the nursing staff employer in lieu of a report to law enforcement agency. In other words, our response to that is, if in the nurse's judgment the behavior of the patient is not something that they're in control of, at that point, you don't have to report to a law enforcement agency. You can report internally within the hospital. Probably the key to that is that we're giving the nurse the discretion to determine whether or not the patient is, in fact, capable of making a good choice versus a bad choice. I guess my other general response to your concern is that we have two things to consider. One is there are assaults in hospitals at a higher rate than assaults in the public from people who aren't being affected by their healthcare condition. Now, they may be affected by unusual or exigent circumstances. They're under stress, or they're scared, or they have a family member that they're worried about. We also need to remember that hospitals, take in all kinds of people, and it's not uncommon in some of our facilities to have people who are not folks that we probably interact with on a daily basis there, but there are higher risk behaviors that happen in a hospital, and this bill attempts to shine a little bit of a light on that, because until we shine a little bit of a light on that, this very high incidence of violence in that workplace will increase. We won't be addressing that. We won't be having the tools to try to get that higher risk behavior under control. I think the second thing is that this is a conversation we have with many nurses, and I recognize you are a nurse as well, but there is something in the conversation a lot of nurses have about the feeling that our patients are all... we need to be more concerned or stronger advocates for our patients than we are for ourselves. And I think that there is a risk that nurses themselves have of saying, you can excuse a person's behavior, but still try to remedy it. If somebody who was on methamphetamines or having a mental health condition assaulted you here, law enforcement would be involved, like it would be in Denny's. If in the nurse's judgment in this bill, that person may be affected by some other things, but are still potentially culpable for their behavior, she does have some responsibility to try to say, look, it's not my job to determine if you just struck me because you're drunk or because you're mean. It's law enforcement and a court's job to figure that out. And I think a lot of our nurses themselves are reluctant to do that. They feel like they're there to treat that person, and they need to be that person's advocate, and they're going to excuse that behavior as part of their condition. And I don't know that it's not always safe to be excusing people's behavior if you're trying to create an environment that's got less violence going on than we're seeing in our nurses.
Thank you very much. Why don't you guys just step aside for a moment? We're in work session on 572. Anybody else wish to testify on this issue? Okay. With that, we will close the work session at the moment on Senate Bill 572. And where should we go here? Let's, Mr. Martinez is here. Let's open up a public hearing on House Bill 2179. Teresa, what do we have before us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2179A came to you, passed unanimously out of the House Trade and Economic Development Committee and unanimously on the House floor. It amends the State Building Code to allow the Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to establish alternative regulatory options for the purposes of encouraging emerging technologies.
Okay, and we have one sign up today, and that is Mr. Mark Long. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. I'll be brief. For the record, Mark Long, Administrative Building Codes Division. This is a bill that we're supporting. It's a consensus bill that's worked with our industry and allows us to speed up the process for dealing with things that are new in nature that we may not have a regulatory standard on. One of my biggest concerns, and I've kind of talked to the committee, is trying to make the process work better for building codes, and this allows us to be proactive. Should something come to this state, a lot of people talk about biofuels right now, and we don't have a standard, it allows us to adopt a standard, work with our industry, and get that up and running as quickly as 45 to 60 days to meet the timelines where the current system could take as long as 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. So that's what the bill does. Again, we've worked with industry, and I appreciate the committee's support. I'd be happy to take any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Long. Questions for Mr. Long? Okay. I think this one's pretty straightforward. Always like to have those options, and when we get back to a full committee, we will bring this bill back before us. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2179 for the moment. This happens this time session. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3016. And let's see, who's going to represent on House Bill 16? Mark, would that be you again? Why don't you come and do that? Why don't you go ahead, Jason? Here we are with the two buildings.
Welcome. Thank you again. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. House Bill 3016 is another consensus bill of the building codes and construction industry. This bill allows us to, frankly, fix some problems with the appeal procedures related to the establishment of local government fees. Current law, believe it or not, requires a jurisdiction, if they're going to raise a fee, to notify the state. We then notify industry. If industry has a concern, we conduct a hearing. This law fixes the gap that's in statute currently where if a jurisdiction doesn't notify us, we don't then notify industry, and there cannot be a timely hearing because the notification never occurred. It's an awkward piece of it's an awkward issue that we're fixing with this piece of legislation. Local government's on board. We work with everybody, and we think it's going to help make the process work better.
Thank you, Mr. Long. Questions for Mr. Long? Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 3016? Okay, then let's close the public hearing on House Bill 3016 and open our work session on House Bill 3016. Anybody have a motion for this?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Armando Sanderson.
I move House Bill 3016 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Armando Sanderson has moved House Bill 3016 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objections? So we're going to go back to a work session. We'll go back to a work session on House Bill 2179. Mr. Long had also testified.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Armando Sanderson.
I move House Bill 2179A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Armando Sanderson has moved House Bill 2179A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Order. I'll carry those two.
We also need to carry on these on the first bill. On 3016.
That's why I said those two. I'll just give the others back. Okay, let's open up public hearing on House Bill 3304. And we have Mark Lendauer and Hank McDonald. And Mark Simmons.
What?
He just didn't bother to sign up. He just assumed he could just waltz on up here anytime he wanted.
I'm not with
this. All right. This is where the skeletons in the closet could be borne out. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mark Landauer with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. Thank you for scheduling this bill. Hank McDonald, who is our building official for the City of Portland, will provide you a brief background and what this bill will do in its present form.
Yes. Chair Mister and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Hank McDonald, and I am the current building official for the City of Portland Bureau of Development Services, and it is my honor to speak with you on House Bill 3304 today. Very simply stated, what House Bill 3304 will do is it will allow municipalities to be able to tailor programs to meet specific customer needs in addition to standard building programs that are required by the state. It's just that simple. We had a Senate bill that required programs around the tri-county area to all resemble one another, and while we support that, we also see that each of the programs around the tri-county area has a different customer group, and we need to be able to respond to the needs of those customers, and so we're seeking to do that with House Bill 3304. Questions?
Okay, well, let's go to Mr. Simmons, and then we'll open up for questions.
Thank you very much, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. I am Mark Simmons. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries, and I have a caboose for this vehicle here, House Bill 3304A4 Amendment. And what this does, and I appreciate your consideration of the amendment. I appreciate Mark Landauer's support to allow it to be tagged on here. It was developed by Dennis Mulvihill from Washington County, Jim Johnson from the Oregon Department of Agriculture, and myself. And it has to do with agricultural grading. And what that is nurseries, outdoor container yards where you have plants growing in pots on top of the ground, they have to shape the ground for drainage. According to DEQ regulations, to capture all the water, irrigation water that is used in the summertime, it flows into a recirculation pond, is treated then, is reused, sprinkled back on the ground. And so that the only water they are consuming is what is evaporates or is consumed by the plants. There is an option in current building code law that allows counties at their discretion to regulate agricultural grading. And Washington County is the only county in the state that is, in fact, regulating agricultural grading and has subjected farmers who are nursery operators who are grading their land to comply with DEQ regulations to the same kind of fees, cubic yard of dirt moved fees, and engineering standards as if you were going to be building a shopping mall on that piece of ground. What this amendment does, and again developed in conjunction with Washington County and Oregon Department of Agriculture, is clarifies that agricultural grading and regulation of agricultural grading is the domain of the Department of Agriculture. And I have given a copy of this amendment to Art Schlack from the Association of Oregon Counties. He said they had no problem with it. Spoken with Bill Cross, who represents building officials, and so far there's no opposition. So we would ask for your support and consideration of the A4 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Simmons. And we'll have Mr. Cross up in a moment. But I think what I'll do is open up to questions on the base bill from the committee. Again, my synopsis of the bill is with our Tri-County Building Permit, which is designed to streamline the process, the intent of the bill is that when a jurisdiction within that area comes up with a process that's even better, they're not exactly allowed to use that. And this would allow a more streamlined process within this jurisdictional area to be utilized by any of the planning and development jurisdictions, but that the applicant could choose to use the original tri-county formula. So it's an either-or, but it allows you to improve, doesn't allow you to get complicated again. Is that a pretty good synopsis?
Yeah.
Okay. Questions of the committee?
Are you going to be providing synopsises of all bills going forward?
Only when you're here, Senator Deckard. I thought it might be helpful.
I like that. Well, okay. We can. I'll do it in the morning at 9 then, and you do it at 1.
Questions of the committee on the base bill? Thank you very much, gentlemen. Mr. Cross, if you want to come forward, and your view has been represented by Mr. Simmons, and we just want to see if that's the same view that you have.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, I'm Bill Cross. I'm representing the Oregon Building Officials Association. We are very supportive of House Bill 3304 as it came over from the House to you. We believe in the basic premise of the bill. We are also comfortable with the amendments being offered on the agricultural grading in that only one county has exercised that option. It really doesn't fall under the mantle of what most building departments are interested in doing, and because that county is ready to agree to move out and let the Department of Agriculture regulate it, we're ready to move on. So we would support the amendment as well as the original bill.
Okay, questions regarding agricultural grading in Washington County? I guess you have no questions. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3304, open work session on House Bill 3304, and we have a dash A4 amendment.
Move.
Senator Starr.
Move the amendment.
Senator Starr has moved the dash A4 amendment to House Bill 3304. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
It's really interesting to me, and this really isn't to the point of this amendment, but it's really interesting to me that we've got some of the best soil in all of the world in the Tualatin River Valley. Absolutely the best. And what do? They pour rock on top of it, then they put this black stuff on top of that, or they put the black stuff down, then the rock on top of that, and then they grow these plants in these containers instead of growing it in that soil that's probably the best in the world. So I guess if they have to move that ground around before they put the black on and then the rock, I guess we need to do this bill. But
well, maybe we can introduce amendments that they have to stick them in the ground. They can't, you know.
That's just amazing.
It is. Any further discussion on the amendment?
I just wish this was a gut and stuff. I like this amendment better than the whole bill, but this is the only way we can get it.
Maybe there might be opportunities before the session is over. Any objections to the amendment? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 3304 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? Ordered. Who would like to carry this bill? Senator Starr, I think your point was very well taken. Would you please carry this bill?
I will carry the bill.
All right. Senator Starr will carry the bill. Close work session, House Bill 3304. Open public hearing on House Bill 2979. And Tim Martinez, Don Wiley.
Oh, great.
These guys are all from Beaverton. They're all...
Oh, excuse me for a moment. Folks, where were you all from?
Lake Oswego and Beaverton.
Students.
Lake Oswego
and Beaverton. And Beaverton. Well, thank you for your help today in the legislature. We appreciate it. And thanks for coming to our committee.
What kind of hoorah deal has Martinez got now?
A hoorah.
Kind of snake oil.
Well, I know that Pam Levitt has just entered the room to keep an eye on him. I know that. Welcome.
She has an amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Tim Martinez, on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association, to my right is Don Wiley, a former chairman of the OBA Agriculture Committee, which reviews bills dealing with agriculture for the Oregon Bankers Association. Mr. Chair, I don't know whether you wanted the administrator to give a summary of the bill or want me to go ahead and do it.
Why don't you go ahead and do it yourself?
Okay, I'm happy to do so. Don is here in case there are specific questions that, of course, I can't answer, which would be anything about how the bill actually works. Basically, this bill deals with financing statements for banks that make loans on farm products. Any bank that makes a loan on a farm product, or lender for that matter, would file a UCC with the Secretary of State. In the last Food Security Act, also known as the Farm Bill at Congress, they made a couple of changes, or allowed states to make a couple of changes that we would like to enact here in Oregon. This bill, we do two, one of which is that the requirement that the financing statement be signed by the debtor. By eliminating that requirement, we'll be able to do it electronically, and this bill, I should say, is supported by the Secretary of State's office, the UCC section. I'm not sure if anybody's here in the room, but they are supportive of the bill. The second change that this bill makes is the location of the property. If you drive around Oregon, a lot of times you'll see crops and you'll have no, it's very difficult to identify down to the legal description. So what we do in this bill is say you only have to identify it down to the county level. That's it in a nutshell. I'd be happy to answer any questions, as would Mr. Wiley, if the committee might have.
Okay. Welcome. Do you have any testimony you want to provide or just to answer questions?
I'm basically here, Mr. Chair, I'm just basically here to answer questions.
Okay, great. Questions from the committee about the effective financing statement? Okay. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2979? And we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2979 and open up a work session on House Bill 2979. Senator Starr. Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2979 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Duckert, would you please carry this bill? You're a man of finances. Open up public hearing on House Bill 2981. Ask Mr. Martinez to rejoin us.
Can I have some? Some water? Finances. Yeah.
You're a man of means.
See me about 3 or 3:30.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to Martinez Oregon Bankers Association. Again, 2981 deals with banks have the requirement to have a registered agent or a registered office in Oregon. Currently, that's not in the law. DCBS does require a new bank to establish a registered agent and a registered office. In conversations with one of the committee members today, I went back and did a little more research on this bill and actually talked to a lawyer who's part of the United Financial Lobby, and he did indicate that it does cause trouble once in a while when somebody doesn't want to sue a bank and they don't know where to send the subpoena to. So we're happy to clear this up for the public so they'll know where to send that in the future. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. So making sure we all know who the registered agent is. Questions for Mr. Martinez?
You just answered mine.
Okay. Then anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2981? All right, close the public hearing on House Bill 2981. Open work session on House Bill 2981.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move 2981 to the fourth due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2981 to the fourth due pass recommendation. Discussion. Objection. Okay. And our last bill today, colleagues, House Bill 3091. And we'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3091. And here for the pure hat trick is Tim Martinez.
Mr. Chairman, thank you again. And members of the committee, Tim Martinez, Oregon Bankers Association. In 1987, this body granted banks insurance powers. The only power that banks could not grant at that point was title insurance. Everybody on this committee has been around long enough to probably figure there was a chairman or somebody in a key position who had an interest in title insurance that felt this was an inappropriate power at that time for banks. The world has changed since 1987, and in fact, in 1998-99 time frame, Congress passed the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which tore down a lot of the walls that banking and commerce had between them, including insurance powers across the board. We simply, in this bill, are trying to draw the last one down in Oregon, which would be title insurance. I've had a couple of conversations with Mr. Monroe representing the title insurers. I'm not sure if he's behind me, but he did in the House side testify that they had no opposition to this bill, and I'm unaware of any opposition to the bill. I'd be happy to go into the details, but that's what we're asking for here.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Banks again expanding their powers into the area of title insurance. Any questions for Mr. Martinez? Senator Atkinson.
Point of clarification for state charter, not national charter.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Atkinson, he's absolutely correct. National banks could do this now under the GLB in certain markets.
So this is the proverbial level playing field bill. Further questions for Mr. Martinez?
Point of illumination.
Point of illumination. Senator Decker, please state your point.
My illuminating point would be, did most states allow title insurance, and Oregon was just an outlier by prohibiting it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Decker, it was really all across the map. Some did not even allow any insurance powers until GLB was passed at the congressional level. Now more and more states are going to that. I can also tell you that on the insurance powers, it's just a handful of banks that have taken advantage of that law even today. And my guess is the ones that would get involved in the title insurance would be the ones that are heavily involved in the real estate market. Wouldn't make a lot of sense for a business bank, but somebody that's heavily involved in real estate.
And I know this is there should be someone arguing this, but is there a rationale? I'm trying to think of, is there a rationale of why you would not have a bank involved in title insurance?
You're going to ask him to why somebody would oppose his bill?
I don't see anyone.
Expect the answer?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Senator Atkinson would like to address that. I'd defer to the good senator.
1819, when the U.S., I think it was 1919, it was a Supreme Court case that set up the National Bank. National Bank was originally set up that it could not have any type of what we would call conflict of interest. So it couldn't, as case law developed, a nationally chartered bank couldn't get into any other type of loan or any type of financial instrument that might have some sort of conflict. But what happened was in the 1920s, you started to have the birth of an investment banking house. And so there was this wall set up. If you were an investment bank, you're an investment bank. If you were essentially a consumer bank, you're a consumer bank. And then about 10 years later, Pam's outfit started under FDR. So you had three types of entities. Two were very similar, his clients, and credit unions and investment banks. And this act that came down in 19, when it finally came down in 1998, it was called the wall of separation because the wall of separation between an investment house and a consumer lending institution came down. And so now they could act like each other. So you saw banks for the first time, consumer banks being able to offer legally investment advice. You could see a consumer bank or an investment house getting into, even though they don't do it, personal loans. And so the wall, when the wall of separation came down, banks ran out and started all kinds of new lines of businesses, title, insurance, consolidation. And you also saw CPA firms starting to act like a bank without taking deposits. They were acting exactly like a bank in terms of investment advice, insurance products. So the wall of separation is down. That's what it means.
And I would just add, Mr. Chairman, if I could, that if you go down to your friendly State Farm agent, perhaps he also now represents the State Farm Bank and would be happy to take your deposits and make your loan. So the walls are falling down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for that very excellent lesson in history.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions?
Okay.
Well, there's no question who's going to be carrying the bill if, in fact, the bill moves. Now, before we go into work session, if this bill goes into work session, it relies on the fact that Mr. Martinez knows, tests his hockey knowledge as to what a pure hat trick is.
That would be three goals in a hockey game, individually scored, I guess, by the same player.
Oh, not exactly right.
All right, hold the bill up.
Hold the bill. Should we give him a pass on this? Anybody else on the committee want to know what a pure hat trick is?
Yeah, I don't know.
Pure hat trick.
All the same period.
Getting much closer.
In consecutive periods.
Senator Decker, three consecutive goals by the same person. Work session, House Bill 3091.
Move the bill.
Senator Atkinson, move House Bill 3091 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Atkinson will carry on the floor, and we are adjourned.